Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. Super happy about this show today. First of all, happy to be back here on a Monday. Thanks for being here with us and making it possible for us to get to do this every day. We're very happy that we do get to do it, and we're happy that you spend the time with us. If you want to call today, we're taking calls both hours, 888-318-7884. Second hour, Everett Fritz will be here. He's just one of the great thinkers about how to evangelize families, how to evangelize young people, teens, and everybody else. And so we're going to talk a bit about forming the leaders of the Catholic future. If you'd like to get involved in that conversation, 888-318-7884. This hour, one of our really good friends is back, and we haven't seen her in a long time, and it's really nice to have Dr. Stacy Drasankos with us this hour. You know that when Stacy's here, that means we're going to talk faith and science. If you've got a faith and science question or a faith and science challenge, you're very welcome this hour, 888-318-7884. You most certainly don't have to be Catholic. Anybody can call. Maybe their science is giving you some trouble with your faith. Maybe your faith is giving you some trouble with science, or maybe you just have a question about one or the other. 888-318-7884. Stacy Drasankos has her PhD in chemistry from Penn State University, and then she went work for DuPont for a while trying to figure out what plants do. Turns out it's really hard to figure out what plants do. She came into the Catholic Church. She's a mom. She's got an MA in theology. Now she's getting an MA in philosophy. And she does a lot of this faith and science stuff. And I'll mention her books in a little bit, but most particularly Particles of Faith. I think that's probably the most famous one where she talked about just about this, about the ways in which exploring the world through faith and science are both joyful tasks to undertake. Dr. Stacy Drasankos, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Cy. It's good to be back again.
I feel like I'm happier about it than you are. You don't seem like I'm super happy that you're back.
I'm happy.
Well, you faked that very well. 888-318-7884. Why are you getting another master's degree? What's that about?
It's something I've wanted to do for a long time. You know, I'm in my 50s now. I'm a grandmother. I'm starting to really reflect on life and where I'm going. And I seem to be like lost in the cosmos among Catholics because I don't understand. When people start talking from philosophy, I just go like a deer in the headlights.
Oh.
But they use words that I know from chemistry, like substance and category and genus and species. And it's like two different languages. And one thing I'm very passionate about is integrating in a modern way, modern science with philosophy and theology. So I figured I better take some time and learn what this philosophy stuff is all about. And it's really fascinating, but it is a whole different language.
Yeah, it's funny. You say it's like two different languages, but in some weird ways, it's like one language being used two completely different ways. So I know you've mentioned to me before the use of the word nature. So when you're talking about nature as a scientist, you're not using that word the way Thomas Aquinas is when he talks about human nature, for example.
Exactly. And I just wrote a paper on that for one of my professors because I wanted to get my head around it. I know what we mean when we say nature, and I even looked in a lot of physics textbooks and chemistry textbooks, biology textbooks. They throw around the word nature all the time, and it's actually used very much the way Aristotle used it. I mean, the people writing the books don't understand, like I don't understand. They don't understand what they're saying, but it's a concept we all have in our head. And so that's one word I think if we could get some chemists and biologists and physicists at a table with some philosophers and theologians, and I know people do this, but I'm talking about fundamental stuff.
Yeah.
Get them together and let's take this concept of nature and let's talk about what that word means, because I don't think it would be hard to come up with a unified definition. And I think once you start to unify the language to match the concepts that are in all our heads, we will be going a long way to unifying science, philosophy, and theology. And it'll be helping modern science, too, because they need some help understanding those things.
I think it's a very—
They, meaning scientists.
Right. It's a very worthy undertaking. I got to tell you, I saw you and listened to your interview on The Journey Home. And it was fantastic, Stacey. I don't know if I don't know if people can go back and watch those again, but it was fantastic. And I was like, I want to be Catholic now, listening to you talk about the Catholic faith and science. And then I was so happy when I remembered I'm already Catholic. But you did a fantastic job. I thought the conversation the two of you had was just wonderful.
Yeah, and he's kind of Marcus Grodi is a scientist himself. So we had a lot in common and a lot to talk about. And the really joyful thing, I mean, talk about a word, science. There's so much to that word science. And he and I were talking about that. I really love the definition that I kind of created after reading Father Stanley Yawkey's work, and Marcus and I were talking about it. Science is the study of the handiwork of God. And if you start impressing that upon people, and I know atheists will be like, say what? You're crazy. Get out of here. But if we just start saying, yeah, but that's how we view science as Catholics. Like, that was one of the biggest things in my conversion. Like, stop pretending like we're not Catholic when we talk about science, just so we can talk to the scientists. Learn all you can about science and then be fully Catholic. Let everybody know I'm looking at this through the lens of faith, and it makes a whole lot of sense to look at the world and see that it's good, it's ordered, it's created in love. This is our home that God gave us, and that when we do science, we're really learning more about God's handiwork, how he did things. It's much cooler to look at science that way than just like doing it so you can get a job.
888-318-7884. One of the things that struck me, I know that you taught, when you taught high school chemistry, you were telling me that putting the chemistry that they were learning into a faith context actually made them more interested in the chemistry, because it wasn't just, she's making us go to this foreign land of mathematics and you know, and elements, but that they were actually exploring something that mattered.
Exactly. I still have students to this day. I was just at Notre Dame University back in November, and I saw a former student there, and she remembers what I said about science being the study of God's handiwork, and it made her want to go on and learn science, and more than that, to do something good for humanity. She's studying neuroscience because of her knowledge of science. So it's a game changer, and it's so far beyond that tired old conflict myth, you know. And I appreciate that you remembered that, Cy, because that was one of my best memories of teaching those kids at Colby Academy, was telling them that and watching how it changed the way they approached science. Because otherwise, kids hate physics. Like, what's the point of learning physics and chemistry?
Yeah,
it's so abstract to them.
Right. There's a lot of us who need a narrative of why am I doing this? We need that account in order to, you know, like even kids who study mathematics, you know, you study math, but why do we have to learn this? You know, that's like one of the main questions I'm sure math teachers are sick of hearing. But, you know, when that is appreciated in the context of faith, that this is the language God has used in his creation of the world. Well, now you got a reason to study mathematics. It fits into a story. And not everybody needs the story. Some people are just overwhelmed in their fascination with mathematics. But for those who do need the story, it makes it having the story makes it much easier to study those things. 888-318-7884, the number I see calls coming in. By the way, if you want to challenge Dr. Trusenkos on whatever she has said, you are welcome to do that. She loves talking about these things, and she's not going to break. So if you disagree about science being the study of the handiwork of God or about any of it, that's welcome. But also, if you're just having trouble with, you know, a scientific question in the context of faith, maybe there's some of the things that happen in the Bible, for example, contradict science, or some of the things that are claimed by our faith contradict science. If you've got those questions, 888-318-7884. Dr. Stacey Trusenkos is our guest. We're talking faith and science this hour on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
If one person's faith has been nourished by this program, it's worth it. And knowing that people of all different walks of life are listening, but also getting something out of it, that's the excitement I find in it.
EWTN Open Line Monday with Father John Trigilio. Tonight, 10 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We never know what's going to happen with one of these faith and science hours. Sometimes it gets to be contentious, which I find fun. And sometimes it is just a great intellectual exercise in trying to understand these various aspects of faith and science. Whatever happens today, you're welcome here, 888-318-7884. I think we've already established that I am much happier to see Stacey Trisankos than she is to see me. I don't know why that is, but I am thrilled that she's back.
That's not true.
You're just so unconvincing. True. So unconvincing.
I'm just nervous because my camera is messing up.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, it might be your camera. It might be our equipment. We don't know. But only one line open, Stacey. Should we go right to the phones or do you want to do something
Great.
Else first?
I'm ready.
All right, let's go to Tito in Houston, Texas, listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Tito, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacey Trisankos.
Sure. I was curious that they share the same language. Didn't science used to be a branch of philosophy called natural philosophy, and it just went from there and became science? The term was coined in the 19th century or so. I was just curious to know if Stacey was aware of that.
Yes, that's something I've been learning about. Like, natural philosophy is what used to mean science. I mean, I've been writing about and teaching students, high school and college students, because I have some college classes on church and science. That the word science used to be a much bigger word than the way we use it today. I mean, the way we use it today is really truncated from the way we used to use it. And I have them look at the Oxford English Dictionary definition just to see the history of the word, even in English. Science used to mean a body of knowledge that we discover from reasoning, discursive reasoning process. And natural science was just a branch of bodies. It was a body of knowledge that had to do with nature and the natural world. And that term just kind of got pushed aside, I guess, whenever after Galileo and Isaac Newton, whenever we started quantifying the movement of objects with mathematics, and which was the game changer, that was the scientific revolution. And then science became modern science, and it became later chemistry, biology. And so now we have the physical sciences, but even today that word science isn't limited to just the physical sciences. We have social sciences, economic sciences, and it would be good. That's another one of those words, just to get back to the base, is to get everybody around a table and say, this is the history of the word. This is what natural science used to be. Where are we now? That's one thing I'm learning in philosophy. We can have concepts in our mind, but how we say those concepts, with the words we apply to them and communicate what we mean, is essential to how we communicate with each other. And so I think a lot of people are using words and they're not really sure what that word means. I always find in my church and science classes, the college students who are science majors are blown away to realize they don't really know what science means. and so we have to go through a process of talking about it and examining where the word came from, what it means today. It kind of was a big word and now it's a small word, and we need to take it back out again to a big word.
Tito, what do you think?
Amen, sister. Hey, Si, I just want to add, I'm very excited to speak with you.
See, there's somebody who, I appreciate that, Tito. I think you could tell in Stacy's voice, she wasn't that fired up to see me again, but I'll get over it.
It's not hard. You.
You know, something. I just want to follow up on what you and Tito were discussing, though, that the modern kind of mania for specialization also means that people don't know what words mean in the other disciplines. So if I'm super specialized in physics, which I got to do to be a really high level physicist, then and I hear the word, just the word we used before, nature. I've learned how that word is used in my specialized field, and I can't talk to people in a theology or a philosophy or a literature department. And I'm sure there are many who don't want to, but I think a normal person wants to be able to communicate with other people.
That's part of the education that's in front of us is telling people why they need to care about this. I mean, because what we want to lead the chemists and biologists and physicists towards is that when we're talking about the nature of a thing, what we're talking about is, what did God create this thing to be? I mean, we can talk about my Samsung Galaxy laptop and I can talk about the nature of it because mankind created it and the designers of it know what they created it to be and do. And I can talk about its properties. But when we're looking at nature and we're looking at a dog that God created and the genus of animal, we mean a certain thing by that. And it would really behoove the chemist and the physicist and the biologist to understand that fuller word, because right now they kind of stop where, this is what happens in nature. They're just talking about the world and this is what happens naturally. And they're not really thinking about why does what happens naturally happen? Why are there animals? Why are there people? Maybe there are some who will see where this is going. Like we're going to end up talking about God and how we're different from all other animals because we have a rational soul if we keep going down that path. But, if Aristotle and Plato and Socrates could do it so long ago, I think we could do it today, too.
Yeah, that's right. Right. If we have the will to. And it's a wonderful contribution. I think it's just fantastic, Stacey. You're getting this other master's degree. And really the purpose is you want to be able to talk across disciplines so that people can start to talk with one another about the real world.
And you know what I'm going to get to, and I haven't said it to any of my professors yet who are philosophers who get kind of frustrated with me because they think I'm a materialist because I can't stop thinking about atoms.
Yeah.
I love atoms, man. But I'm going to look at the philosophers out there one day and the theologians. I'm going to be like, hey, guys, if I can learn theology and philosophy, your turn. You need to come over here and
learn
sit
some
in
science.
My physics class and my chemistry class and let me tell you what's going on here because you need to know this.
Well, that's wonderful. What if you're the only person, like we all kind of laugh when you say, I love atoms, man, because we know you as the person who loves atoms around here. Let's go to Columbus, Ohio. Tito, thank you for that call. Tom in Columbus, Ohio, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Dr. Stacey Trusenkos is our guest. Go ahead, Tom, with your question. Tom, do I have you there? I thought I heard him. Well, I can come back to him. Tom, we'd love to talk with you, but I will I'll work my way back around. I'm going to go to Patrick in Grand Rapids, Michigan in the meantime. Tom, I'm not going to hang up on you, so if you hang on, I will check the line in a second. Patrick in Grand Rapids is listening on Ave Maria Radio. Patrick, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacey Trusenkos.
Okay, guys, you're going to have to forgive me because I don't have a question, and I'm going to be very brief because when I turned on the radio – listening to you, I went, oh my gosh, I have to tell you what happened 3 months ago, and maybe this will be something that, doctor, you can use. I don't know. We're in a sales meeting, big grease board, we're waiting to do the meeting, and we're talking about this topic, five or six people in there, and God, and it was definitely not a business topic. And I said, well, listen, if you're so smart, and this person is very smart, I go, I want you to go write up on the grease board what the most famous scientific equation is. And what do you think they wrote?
Oh, I thought I was going to get the guess. Sorry, I was really going to try to impress you there. But all right, go ahead.
I'm trying to be fast because I don't want to get in front of somebody else's question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So they wrote E equals MC squared. And I sat back and I went, that is really an incomplete equation. And I wrote up, and the greater sign and less than sign, I wrote, it's less than God. So it was E equals MC squared is less than God. And everybody just stopped. And I'm just sitting there, I'm listening to somebody a lot smarter than me, because another person in there after the meeting, she goes, Patrick, you ought to write a book and entitle it that on the front of the book. And I said, I'm not smart enough.
That's all right. I'm going to steal it anyways, Patrick. I've just stole your idea. So what do you make of that? Because that seems to fit with what you say, Dr. Trusenkos.
Yeah, it pushes you to ask deeper questions, because if you say E equals MC squared, I think you could do this even with a glass of lemonade. If you look at anything, you're ultimately going to wonder, where did it come from? Where did energy and mass and the speed of light come from? How do we know that relationship between energy, mass, and the speed of light? Why does light even have a speed? Why does light travel at that speed? And why is the universe made the way it is? I think, you know, or if you're looking at a glass of lemonade and you're talking about sugar molecules and lemons and how they grow on trees and where trees came from and why we have life on Earth. I mean, you can walk anything back like that, all the way back to God. Like, honestly, nothing in life makes sense. Nothing about our existence makes sense if you're cutting off God and you're just only willing to look so far. I mean, it's not that exciting just to look to E equals MC squared and say, oh, okay, now I understand how the universe works. No, you don't. You have an equation that you're not even really sure how Einstein came up with it.
And you probably don't even know what the E and the M and the C stand for. I know what squared is, but what do you think, Patrick?
No, I thought that was good.
Thank you. I just
thought it was you could start off a lesson with it. But anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the book idea.
Thank
I appreciate you.
You
letting me take that. let's go back to Tom in Columbus, Ohio, listening to EWTN on Channel 130 Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Let's see if we can connect with Tom. Tom, are you there with us?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Tom. Go ahead with your question or comment for Dr. Stacey Trusenkos.
My question is, if the universe operates according to quantum mechanics, and quantum mechanics has no beginning and no end, it kind of starts in the middle, how do we rationalize that in terms of the Christian opinion that the universe had a beginning and it will have an end?
Okay. I think I understand your question. And just to keep things short, I'm going to answer it, but correct me if I didn't understand it the right way. So I don't know if quantum mechanics assumes that there's no beginning or end, but certainly before the Big Bang theory came along, that was the prevailing cosmological consensus, that there was this steady state universe and that there was no beginning in time. During those days, Father Georges Lemaître, the physicist who came up with what would later be called the Big Bang theory, that posits a time equals zero, a beginning in time, assumes a time equals zero. Even he, what you're saying about quantum mechanics, even he operated as a physicist in a culture that didn't scientifically think there was a beginning in time. And when he posited the Big Bang theory, he was actually accused of letting his faith tell him what his science needed to be. And he said, no, that's not true. My equations are pointing me in this direction. So the point there is, even if science has this assumption in its equations that there is no beginning in time, no end in time, it's just for the parameters of those equations. It doesn't mean there really is or isn't a beginning in time. The Big Bang theory itself doesn't prove a beginning in time. It assumes a beginning in time. And so you really always kind of, if you remember that science is the study of the handiwork of God, you're really always just kind of figuring out what we can learn from science, knowing that the ontological reality is something that science will never fully describe. It strives to describe reality, but it probably doesn't completely. Same with evolution. And quantum mechanics very much is a description of what we can see. So I get into arguments with physicists here. As a chemist, quantum mechanics to me helped me figure out where electrons probably were so I could make stuff. And sometimes I treated electrons and photons like particles. Sometimes I treated them like waves. Whatever works to make stuff, I'm good. So I was never like using quantum mechanics to tell me exactly what reality is. I was using it to probe reality and find an equation that worked to predict what I wanted to do. So I don't know if it's true that quantum mechanics says there's no beginning and no end, but even if it did, it's just a scientific theory. We don't know everything.
Tom, I'm going to come back to you and we'll check back in with you because it's a fascinating question when we come back. And I've actually never used quantum mechanics to do anything. Nothing, like literally nothing have I ever used quantum mechanics. So I'm anxious to hear how you and Stacey work this out. Dr. Stacey Trusenko's our guest, the number 888-31-TRUTH. We're talking faith and science on Catholic Answers Live. The recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade was a monumental victory for the pro-life movement. But the fight is far from over. With our new booklet, Why We're Pro-Life, we have produced the perfect tool to prepare you to have peaceful and convincing conversations to shed light on the truth about human life from conception to natural death. Catholic Answers is printing millions of copies of this booklet, and we plan simply to give them away. You can help us in two ways. First, by generously supporting this project. 25 cents prints one book. $2,500 prints 10,000, and so on. Second, by helping us distribute the booklet through your parish, your school, or the pro-life ministry you work with. Catholic Answers is going to blanket the country with Why We're Pro-Life. But only if you step up and help us. Thank you so much. For more information, visit whyweareprolife.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Catholic Answers Live is 25 years old. That's a quarter century helping people come into deeper communion with the Catholic faith. As we move into our second quarter century, please help us reach thousands more by becoming a Society 315 monthly donor. Right now, when you join Society 315 at a monthly giving level of $25 or more, we've added some extra perks to the other great benefits we already offer members. Go to givecatholic.com and choose the monthly option to start your donation. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I said I was going to go back to Tom, but Tom dropped. Not exactly sure what happened, but we don't always know what happened there. But so we will assume that was a satisfactory answer.
Hi.
Hey, was that Jeanette Bankovich? Let's go to Lori in Akron, Ohio. Is she trying to take over the show? Living Bread app she's listening on. Lori, we're happy you're here. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Dr. Stacey Trusenko's.
Thank you. I was wondering if you're familiar with Graham Hancock. My husband and I recently watched a series that he's done on Netflix called Ancient Apocalypse. It's, you know, archaeological in nature. So I wanted to know your opinion of that in light of Bible and, you know, Adam and Eve and Noah and, you know, the timeline and everything. So I don't know if you've heard of it.
No, I haven't. Lori, I haven't watched that. The last thing I watched on Netflix was Narcos. So very different. I do watch Netflix, but I was interested in the history of drugs in America. But could you tell me a little bit about the basic thesis?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask me that. Well, I guess to put it in a nutshell, he has traveled all over the world and discovered numerous sites where there appear to be structures that were formed before the Ice Age. And he's at odds with archaeologists. They think he's out of his mind, and he thinks they're closed-minded. So there is that whole thing going on. But he's looking for more evidence of a prehistoric civilization that was more advanced than the typical hunter-gatherer that we usually think of. And he's saying that these structures exist because there were some civilizations dating way back, prehistoric ice age, that had, had advanced technology, advanced astronomy, advanced engineering skills to build these amazing structures.
What do you think, Stacey?
The way I approach things like that is I just kind of let the scientists do their job. Is it possible that something like that could be discovered? It's always possible that something like that. It's always possible that we haven't discovered all of the fossils and the archaeological digs that are to be discovered, and that something could be discovered that force us to rethink what we know about the past, because we know so little about the ancient past. Especially before anybody could write things down. And is it possible? Yes, there's no conflict with our faith on something like that, because again, we're studying nature. And if something is really there and we discover it and we need to figure out what happened, no conflict with our faith. Now, what usually happens though is sometimes people get data and they don't analyze it well, or they don't analyze it honestly, or they have an agenda. That is always human. It's always going to be. But I happen to think that over time, the truth trickles up. So even if now on Netflix, there's something and it's controversial like that, let it play out. And if this guy is just trying to make a series for money, that'll become evident someday. And if he's not, and if he's onto something, which Netflix thinks he is, then that will sift to the top someday. So I don't get too worried about things like that, but I think it's absolutely fine and no contradiction with faith to be interested in things like that. I'm interested in the history of drug use in America just because I didn't know all of that about, the drug lords and smuggling and all of that. So be interested.
Lori, I actually think your television choices are better than Stacey's, but we'll have to leave it there. This does seem like a thing for Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, though. I think you should suggest it there, Lori. And I'm only moving on because the lines continue completely full for Stacey. So I suggest that for Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. And on we go. Eric in Kansas listening on 101.7 FM. Eric, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacey Trisankos.
Yes, Dr. Stacey. I'm just curious about your view of evolution. I am a Catholic, but I do not believe in any form of biological evolution whatsoever. I believe God did what he intended, and that's basically it.
Well, And the church says that you are free to believe that, but I don't think it makes any sense. I don't think it jives with what we see. I mean, if God just made everything the way he intended and that's it, it's too much like God not being this loving creator who's involved in all of our lives. I mean, I've had 7 children and every one of them was very different, and they're part of the human species, but they're also different. They're unique as individuals. And I don't find it talking about macroevolution and the evolution of different species of animals over time. I don't find that to be a problem at all. If nature works where animals breed and reproduce and natural selection can cause some to survive, some genes to survive in the gene pool and others not, because of pressures on reproduction, I don't find that to be a difficulty. I also don't think we know everything about evolution that there is to know. I think there are other factors that might drive the emergence of new species and the extinction of other species. I think it's amazing that there's so many different kinds of life in the world today. The New York Times said one time on the front page, scientists only know about a quarter of the species of life in the ocean. And I remember thinking, how do they know they only know a quarter? Because that would presume they know the whole thing. But there's so many life forms that we don't know about. And sure, God created things the way he wants them to be, but he's also drawing all of nature and all of creation toward an end, a teleological end that he wills. So we will disagree. I don't find a problem with evolution. I just think it's misunderstood by a lot of people. That's not saying that you're dumb because you don't agree with me. I'm not in the same place as you are.
Eric, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much for the call. I am aware that we have limited time with Dr. Trusenkos, and on we go. So we'll go to Aaron in Illinois, listening on Catholic.com. That's our website, Catholic.com. Eric, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Trusenkos.
Hi. Looking into the traditional, you know, the church fathers and how they'd talk about the incarnation, they would always attribute the humanity of Christ wholly to Mary, whereas with today's modern science, we would understand the distinction between the X and Y chromosomes and how Mary wouldn't have a Y chromosome to give to Jesus. But still today in modern discussions of it, I hear them reiterating what the early church fathers said a whole lot and never really discussing much the implications of the science of the Y chromosome. And I don't have a problem with that because God could have created a Y chromosome, but I was just wondering if there's any reason why they emphasize that it was Holy Mary who gave God his humanity, or what your thoughts would be on that.
I think that's just one of those questions we don't know. I think it's in that same bucket as Mary's perpetual virginity. Like, how did the baby child get out of her? We don't know those exact details, but yet we know her virginity was perpetual. We know Christ was fully human, fully divine, but he didn't leave any DNA behind for us to study. I wish he had sometimes, but that's just my limited knowledge. But Christ didn't leave any DNA behind. There have been some Eucharistic miracles, the ones in Buenos Aires in particular, that posited that they had the host turned to flesh, and they had the flesh analyzed, and there was DNA, they said, but when they tried to analyze the sequence of the DNA, they couldn't. Now, I tend to think maybe that was just because there wasn't any DNA there, and that what they were actually seeing was contaminant DNA from people who touched the host, because you get DNA on things whenever you touch something. But other people have said that's proof that since Jesus Christ did not have a biological father, the DNA is not the same as the rest of human DNA. I actually challenged that in my book, Behold It As I. I said, I think that's going too far. They are saying with theological certainty something that the church has not said with theological certainty. So I don't think we know what Jesus Christ's DNA looked like. I don't think we know the nucleic acid sequence of it. Maybe Jimmy, that's another one for Jimmy Akin on his show sometime.
Okay, Aaron. No, Aaron? All right. There could be a little bit of a phone thing going on. I don't know. That we might have a little delay because we've missed on a couple of people this hour, but we're doing the best we can. And we have we got another Aaron in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But Aaron number two, if you'll hang on a quick second, we'll do this break and we'll come right back with more conversation about faith and science with theologian and scientist Dr. Stacy Trusenkos right after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
He was a mystic and reformer who died at the age of 33.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Catherine of Siena accomplished something no one thought possible. She convinced Pope Gregory XI to return to Rome after the popes had lived in France for almost the whole of the 14th century. They've been there ever since.
To find out more, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. It's a lot of fun when Dr. Stacey Trusankos is here because she's a scientist, she's a theologian, and now she's working on being a philosopher as well. And it's, boy, the modern world has a lot of points at which you'd say, I'd wish I had a scientist and a theologian to talk about that with me, because it seems to need both, and that's what she provides, and that's why we get lots of calls when she's here. And I promised Aaron in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that I would go right to him when we came back. And so, Aaron, listening on St. Michael Radio in Oklahoma, you are up next. Go ahead with your question or comment for Dr. Stacey Trusankos.
I cut out. Can you hear me?
We can hear you very well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I can't hear you very well, but all right. So I struggle with the concept of God's infinite goodness. So here's my question. If He makes organic beings that are killed by things like, say, gamma radiation, and He puts us on this planet that is constantly bombarded with deadly frequencies, and yet if I have a baby and then put that baby in harm's way intentionally or unintentionally, I am criminally negligent at the very least. So how do I reconcile with God being good and yet having these realities? You know, it's like a parent keeping a firearm in the house for protection, but is then misused by a child to harm others. And that's not the intention of the parent, but yet they're still criminally liable for that.
Got it.
It feels less accidental since God is supposed to be both omnipotent and omnipresent. So He would know how gamma rays would happen. Why would He do this? How do I consider Him good and yet putting us in this obvious
peril
trap that has nothing to do with our own decisions?
Stacey?
Well, it's the usual suffering question. Why is there suffering? And my best answer, and there's a lot of different answers to that question. There's the theological answer that God knows the big picture. God knows the end from the beginning, and we're just here at this point in time, and we don't know everything, and we don't understand the big picture, and that if we keep the faith, everything will turn out okay in the end. Kind of like the kid in the house whose parents have a gun, the child doesn't understand why he can't play with it. The parent knows more, and the relationship of a child to a parent is nothing compared to the infinite distance between us and God. So we have to have faith. And for me, this is just Stacey Trusankos talking, who my biggest title is mother and grandmother now. So I have a whole bunch of grandkids getting older. And with a big family, there's a lot of tragedy, like just what you're talking about with gamma radiation. We had a grandson that was born prematurely last October, and his mother fought so hard to get him here alive. Great sacrifice to get that baby born alive, and he was getting better, all the best medical care, getting better, and he died after 11 days because he got a blood infection, E. coli of all things. And I have talked to my priest about it. I'm mad at God. I've called it mad faith. You know, I have mad faith, and what I mean by that is I'm mad at God. I don't understand why that had to happen. It does not make any sense to me whatsoever, because now my precious daughter is really, she thinks she's God's least favorite person in the world, because she's like pretty much turned away because she's so distraught and destroyed by this. She doesn't understand. My mad faith means I still believe that God is good. I still believe that there is, I'm not going to say there's a purpose in all that. I still believe that baby, St. Amias, is in heaven, and that I will see him again someday, that this will all make some kind of sense someday. I'm terribly worried about my daughter. And so in this valley of tears, in this world where I don't understand gamma radiation and E. coli and why bad things have to happen, I, Stacey Trusankos, have to, even though I have mad faith, I have to have this black tunnel where I just breathe and look at that black tunnel and let everything else, I know it sounds kind of mystical, but everything else has to fall away. And I focus on the light, which is Christ. And I just say, Jesus, I trust in you. Because I have learned in my life at age 53 that when I stop focusing on Christ in that tunnel and I start trying to fix everything around me myself, I can't. And I sometimes make things worse. So that's my mature woman answer. And I won't say that I totally have all the suffering figured out. I just know that if there weren't free will and if this weren't a fallen world, we'd just already be in heaven. So we're in a fallen world. We're in a world with people who have free will, and there is evil and there is suffering. And I'm not going to lie to you and say I have it all theologically and philosophically figured out, because I don't. But I am keeping the faith.
Aaron?
Yeah, I'm here. She had got up, but I started to hear that. And I hear you, but at the same time, I struggle with, if I can control what reality is, then why choose a reality where just simply being, just simply standing on the planet that I was born on is killing me? That doesn't seem right. And if there's a fall, does that mean the fall and creation of all of creation was somehow twisted so that all of time, space, our entire reality that we know, since he's outside of time and space, is now a corrupted version of itself? But if so, then there are miracles, and miracles are supposed to be able to counteract that, but they seem capricious and whenever, not in a specific formulaic manner. So I hear you, but it still bothers me a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I remember reading in the book Introduction to Christianity, before he was Pope Benedict, Professor Ratzinger at the time, saying that there are some things where both the believer and the unbeliever have to sit together and say, I don't know, is the answer. It doesn't mean that we have the same response to it, but it is fair to say both have to say, I don't know, and suffering is the and suffering and death are the great I don't knows for everyone. Nobody. But there's that doesn't take away the possibility of faith, as Stacy said, that still and I don't know, you know, faith. I don't believe in the word capricious can be applied to God. But why does God give faith to some and seems not to give it to others? I don't know. I don't know that. But it is possible still to have faith even in the face of suffering and death, and to still have to sit with the answer, I don't know. I don't know why God allows that. But I do know I have to keep going, Aaron, and I want to go because Conrad
good
called.
Good question, Aaron.
It's a wonderful question. We'd all like I remember Pope Benedict, when he was Pope, the interviewer said to him, what do you want to ask God when you see him face to face? And he said, why all this suffering? And he was not saying that as a person with no faith, but we all want an answer to that question. Why? Why all this suffering? And there is an answer to it. That's what faith tells us. Conrad in Ireland, listening on EWTN, thank you for your call. Conrad, go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trusankos.
Hi, Dr. Trusankos. It's nice meeting you. I have a question. In fact, for the past few years, I have found that the science as we know it and religion are completely incompatible. The Bible is full of these things from start to finish. And I'd like one sentence answer for this question is, the miracle of the loaves and fishes, how can that be described in a chemical or a physical context? That's it.
Yep. Are you finished?
Yeah, he said that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. So that's a great question. I remember reading something from C.S. Lewis in his book on miracles, and he was, I believe that was the book. He was making the point that some of the miracles that Christ worked were simply speeding up what happens in nature. And so, you know, bread eventually would, you know, the seeds would eventually grow and multiply. Fish would multiply. The water turning to wine would, you know, if given the right conditions with the grapes and everything and sugar and fermentation would happen naturally. So sometimes he speeds up things that happen naturally. But here's the thing about miracles. Miracles don't break the laws of nature. And if God created everything and God preordained these laws of nature that we study, if they're not, they're prescriptive laws. God made the laws of nature that dictate how fish multiply and how bread multiplies. A miracle would necessarily be something that does not follow the laws of nature that we know. That's what St. Augustine said and what St. Aquinas said later, repeating what Augustine said, that a miracle is something that happens against the order which we know. And so, you know, the God who created everything out of nothing could also intervene in nature and make something happen that doesn't otherwise happen for the sake of our salvation. It's always to communicate his love to us. And so that story has become a story that's told in the Bible, and it was part of Christ's ministry and his life. And we use that story now in our own lives. Like for me, how can I multiply what God gave me? Do I have so much faith that even against the laws, which I know, the laws of my country, the laws of nature, the laws in chemistry and physics, do I have so much faith that I believe God could do a miracle like that, could work a miracle like that? It's a radical kind of faith that you believe miracles like that could happen anytime God wants them to. And it's also a strength of faith to, I'm finding it's hard to also accept when the miracles don't happen that you want to happen, like my grandson getting better. I mean, that's how big God is. That he's like the father that has just a metaphor, I guess, or story. If there's a father who has laws about when the kids get to eat dessert, like no dessert until after dinner, you eat your dinner, then you get dessert. The father could say one day, if a little girl had a really hard time at school and she came home crying and she was upset, he could say, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go get you whatever ice cream you want and serve you up a big bowl of it right now before dinner. Yes, before dinner, because I want to communicate my love to you right now. And I can suspend the laws for the sake of doing that. So that's how much God loves us. If miracles made sense according to the laws of nature, they wouldn't be miracles.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Dr. Arsound. I couldn't really hear you there, but what I will do is I'll go back into the podcast and I'll review what you said.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Conrad. And then we'll have Stacy on again before too long. We won't go as long without everyone on. And then if her answer is inadequate, we will have you on first to explain to her why that answer was completely inadequate. Thank you, Conrad, very much for the call. Stacy, just a few months ago, you were over in Europe answering questions about the Catholic faith faith and science type questions in Budapest. Are still people that believe in God in Europe, and how'd that conversation go with the young people?
Yeah, I went to Budapest for a conference for just a very small number of select college students from four different continents who gathered in Budapest for 2 weeks to learn about some of the biggest issues facing Catholic laity right now in our societies. These were individuals who are thought to be leaders one day. So there was a lot of talk about different issues, and the issue I covered was faith and science. And I was privileged beyond words to be in Father Stanley Jaki's country, Hungary, where he was born, to be right there teaching his work to the next generation of Catholic leaders out there in the world. So I made sure they understood what he said about science being born of Christianity.
Okay, we'll just give this ad then for Father Stanley Yaki. Science is Born of Christianity is the big book. But if you want to get a kind of more contemporary interpretation, I suppose, of that work and application of that work, Particles of Faith, the very fine book from Dr. Stacy Trusankos. Stacy, thanks for being here with us. It's just so great to have you on again.
Great. Thank you so much, Si. Good to see you.
Coming up, Everett Fritz on Catholic Answers Live.